Good morning. Welcome to Inquisition Update. My name's Tom Fress, and I'll be your host for the next hour. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're going to get right to business this morning, returning to the book A Woman Rides a Beast by David Hunt. I keep calling him David. My apologies. He went by Dave. Dave Hunt. And we're in Chapter 6, entitled A City on Seven Hills. This is Vatican City. This is fulfillment of Bible prophecy. It's very important for those who call themselves Protestants today to understand what makes them Protestant. They protested this city, and they protested its potentate, the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist, the Roman Catholic Pope. On the first full paragraph on page 76, backing up just a bit for continuity, the author says the Roman Catholic Church is by far the wealthiest institution on earth. That's right. Despite her incessant claims of poverty, seeking to describe herself as poor, as was Jesus and the apostles, the Roman Catholic Church is, in fact, the wealthiest institution on earth by far. And I highly recommend, to substantiate this claim, a book by the author Avro Manhattan entitled The Vatican Billions. The Vatican Billions by Avro Manhattan. Just one of many books on the subject, but that one we've read here on Inquisition Update in particular, it enumerates all that can be even calculated by the Roman Catholic, the wealth accumulated by the Roman Catholic Church over the last two millennia. And it's incalculable, incalculable wealth of the Roman Catholic Church. By far, the wealthiest institution on the planet. You have to know that with that much wealth comes an equivalent amount of influence in the world. Power to coerce, power to wage war, power to overpower any other power on the earth. Yes, according to Dave Hunt, one hears from Rome periodic pleas for money, persuasive appeals claiming that the Vatican cannot maintain itself on its limited budget and needs monetary assistance. Such pleas are unconscionable ploys. The value of innumerable sculptures by such masters as Michelangelo, painted by the world's greatest artists, and countless other art treasures and ancient documents which Rome possesses, not only at the Vatican but in cathedrals around the world, is beyond calculation. At the World Synod of Bishops in Rome, England's Cardinal Heenan proposed that the Church sell some of its superfluous treasures and give the proceeds to the poor. His suggestion, obviously, was not well received by the Vatican. Christ and his disciples lived in poverty. He told his followers not to lay up treasure on earth, but in heaven. The Roman Catholic Church has disobeyed that command and has accumulated a plethora of riches without equal, of which, quote, the Roman Pontiff is the supreme administrator and steward, unquote. This is according to Roman Catholic canon law. There is no church, no city, which is a spiritual entity, no religious institution, past or present, which even comes close to possessing the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church. A recent newspaper article described only a fraction of that treasure at only one location. Quote, the fabulous treasure of Lourdes, France, whose existence was kept secret by the Roman Catholic Church for 120 years, has been unveiled. Rumors have been circulating for decades about a priceless collection of gold chalices, diamond-studded crucifixes, a far cry from the blood-stained cross on which Christ died, silver and precious stones donated by grateful pilgrims. After an indiscreet remark made by a press spokesman this week, Roman Catholic Church authorities agreed to reveal part of the collection. Just part of the collection. Some floor-to-ceiling cases were opened to reveal 59 gold chalices alongside rings, crucifixes, statues, and heavy gold brooches, many encrusted with precious stones. Almost hidden by the other treasures is the crown of Notre Dame de Lourdes, made by a Paris goldsmith in 1876 and studded with diamonds. Church authorities say they cannot put a value on the collection. Quote, "I have no idea," says Father Pierre-Marie Chiriez, director of Patrimony and Sanctuaries. Quote, "It is of inestimable value," unquote. Across the road, we're talking about another building, across the road is a building housing hundreds of antique ecclesiastical garments, robes, mitres, and sashes, many in heavy gold thread. Quote, "The church itself is poor," insists Father Chiriez. "The Vatican itself is poor," unquote. As if repeating the lie often enough would make it true, right? The treasure described here is only part of which is kept in one single location, the small town of Lourdes in France. Unquote. Now subtitled "The Mother of Harlots and Abominations," the author writes, "The more deeply one probes into the history of the Roman Catholic Church and its current practices, the more impressed one becomes with the amazing accuracy of the vision of John, received centuries before it would all be a lamentable reality. John's attention is drawn to the inscription boldly emblazoned upon the woman's forehead. Quote, "Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth." See Revelation chapter 17, verse 5. Sadly enough, the Roman Catholic Church fits the description of mother of harlots and abominations as precisely as she fits the others. Much of the cause can be traced to the unbiblical demand that her priests be celibates. Now, before I even continue, I want to remind my listeners that the decree of celibacy only restricts the priests from marriage. Not that they must be virtuous. And the world gives testimony in our day that the priests of Rome, though they may claim to be celibate, unmarried, are not chaste and are not virtuous. They are the sexual scum of the world. And the one single group, the one single body of human beings in this world that is most susceptible to sexually transmitted diseases are the popes and priests of Rome. They're the largest group in humanity suffering from AIDS. And it's no wonder. They may be celibate, they may not be married, but they are not chaste. Never have been and never will be. And we've all heard repeatedly the reference to the Roman Catholic pedophile priest pandemic. But it goes far worse than that. The great apostle Paul was a celibate and recommended that life to others who wanted to devote themselves fully to serving Christ. He did not, however, make it a condition for church leadership, as the Roman Catholic Church has done, thereby imposing an unnatural burden upon all clergy that very few could bear. On the contrary, he wrote that a bishop should be, quote, "the husband of one wife," unquote. See 1 Timothy 3:2. And set the same requirement for elders. See Titus chapter 1, verse 5 and 6. Peter, whom the Catholics erroneously claim was the first pope, was married. So were at least some of the other apostles. This fact was not the chance result of their having been married before Christ called them, but it was accepted as an ongoing norm. Paul himself argued that he had a right to marry, like the rest. Quote, "Have we not power to exercise, to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord and of Cephas?" So they were married, and Paul had that same right. See 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5. The Roman Catholic Church, however, has insisted upon celibacy, even though many popes, among them Pope Sergius III, who reigned from 904 to 911 AD, Pope John X, who reigned from 914 to 928 AD, John XII, reigned from 955 to 963, Benedict V, 964, Innocent VIII, 1484 to 92, Urban VIII from 1623 to 44, and Pope Innocent X, 1644 to 55, as well as millions of cardinals, bishops, archbishops, monks, and priests throughout history have repeatedly violated such vows. Not only has celibacy made sinners of the clergy who engage in fornication, but it makes harlots out of those with whom they secretly cohabit. Rome is indeed the mother of harlots. Her identification as such is unmistakable. No other city, church, or institution in the history of the world is her rival in this particular evil. Now, I want to add that just because the popes don't and the priests and the prelates of the Roman Catholic Church are not faithful to their celibate status, they are not pure, they are not virtuous, but are wicked sinners, is not the reason why the Roman Catholic Church is called the mother of harlots. Harlotry in the Bible is made reference to the fact that the Roman Catholic Church is not faithful to Christ, but goes whoring after other gods, just like Israel did. That's what makes this church, this woman, a whore in the sight of God. And the physical manifestation of that whoredom produces what we see visible in the world, the sexual impropriety of the Roman Catholic Church. They are spiritually fornicators and adulterers, and likewise physically fornicators and adulterers. The spiritual has its physical equivalent, and Rome's spiritual fornication simply manifests itself and is visible to the world through her sex crimes. Now, history is replete with sayings that mock the Church's false claim to celibacy and reveal the truth. Quote, "The holiest hermit has his whore," unquote. And, quote, "Rome has more prostitutes than any other city because she has the most celibates," unquote, are examples. Pius II declared that Rome was, quote, "the only city run by bastards," that is, illegitimate sons of popes and cardinals. Catholic historian and former Jesuit priest Peter de Rosa writes, quote, "Popes had mistresses of 15 years of age, were guilty of incest and sexual perversions of every sort, had innumerable children, were murdered in the very act of adultery by jealous husbands who found them in bed with their wives. In the cold Catholic phrase, why be holier than the Pope?" Okay? This is why Roman Catholicism is so corrupt. Roman Catholics are so corrupt. Look at the example they have to follow. the popes and priests of the Roman Catholic Church are the most vile sexual offenders on the planet. They ought to be reviled in every nation on the planet. But just because they tout the name Jesus, they are excused of the most heinous sexual sins. He continues, as for abominations, even Roman Catholic historians admit that among the popes were some of the most degenerate and unconscionable ogres in all of history. Their numerous outrageous crimes, many of which are almost beyond belief, have been recited by many historians from preserved documents that reveal the depths of papal depravity, some of which we will cover in later chapters. To call any of these men, quote, His Holiness, Vicar of Christ, unquote, makes a mockery of holiness and of Jesus Christ. Yet the name of each one of these unbelievably wicked popes, mass murderers, fornicators, robbers, warmongers, some guilty of massacre of thousands, is emblazoned in honor on the Church's official list of popes. These abominations that John foresaw not only occurred in the past, but continue to this very day, as we shall see. Subtitling Drunk with the Martyr's Blood, Dave Hunt continues. He says, John next notices that the woman of Revelation chapter 17 is drunk, and not with an alcoholic beverage. She is drunk with, quote, the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, unquote. See Revelation chapter 17, verse 6. The picture is a horrible one. It's not merely her hands that are red with this blood, but she is drunk with it. The slaughter of innocents for conscience' sake would not yield to her totalitarian demands has so refreshed and exhilarated her that she feels in ecstasy. One thinks immediately of the Inquisitions, the Roman, the medieval, and the Spanish Inquisitions, which for centuries held Europe in their terrible grip. In his History of the Inquisition, Canon Llorente, who was the secretary to the Inquisition in Madrid from 1790 to 1792 and had access to the archives of all the inquisitorial tribunals, estimated that in Spain alone, the number of condemned exceeded 3 million, and about 300,000 burned at the stake. A Catholic historian comments upon events leading up to the suppression of the Spanish Inquisition in 1909. Quote, when Napoleon conquered Spain in 1808, a Polish officer in his army, Colonel Lemanowski, reported that Dominicans, who were then in charge of the Holy Office of the Inquisition, blockaded themselves in their monastery in Madrid. When Lemanowski's troops forced an entry, the inquisitors denied the existence of any torture chambers. The soldiers searched the monastery and discovered them under the floors. The chambers were full of prisoners, all naked, many insane. The French troops, used to cruelty and blood, could not stomach the sight. They emptied the torture chambers, laid gunpowder to the monastery, and blew the place up, unquote. To wring out confessions from these poor creatures, the Roman Catholic Church devised ingenious tortures so excruciating and barbarous that one is sickened by their recital. Church historian Bishop William Shaw Kerr writes, quote, the most ghastly abominations of all was the system of torture. The accounts of its cold-blooded operations make one shudder at the capacity of human beings for cruelty. And it was decreed and regulated by the popes who claimed to represent Christ on earth. Careful notes were taken not only of all that was confessed by the victim, but of his shrieks, his cries, his lamentations, his broken interjections and appeals for mercy. The most moving things in the literature of the Inquisition are not the accounts of their suffering left by the victims, but the sober memoranda kept by the officers of the tribunals. We are distressed and horrified because there's no intention to shock, unquote. You see, they thought they were doing God service by torturing men, women, and children in the Inquisition. And they weren't trying to shock anybody, they were just doing their jobs. The remnants of some of the chambers of horror remain in Europe and may be visited today. They stand as memorials to the zealous outworking of Roman Catholic dogmas which remain in force today, and to a church which claims to be infallible and to this day justifies such barbarism. They are also memorials to the astonishing accuracy of John the Revelator's vision in Revelation chapter 17. In a book published in Spain in 1909, Emilio Martinez writes, quote, "To these 3 million victims, as documented by Llorente, should be added the thousands upon thousands of Jews and Moors deported from their homeland. In just 1 year, 1481, and just in Seville, the Holy Office of the Inquisition burned 2,000 persons, the bones and effigies of another 2,000, and another 16,000 were condemned to varying sentences." Peter de Rosa acknowledges that his own Roman Catholic Church, quote, "was responsible for persecuting Jews, for the Inquisition, for the slaughtering of heretics by the thousand, for reintroducing torture into Europe as part of the judicial process," unquote. Yet, the Roman Catholic Church has never officially admitted that these practices were evil, nor has she ever apologized to the world or to any of the victims or their descendants. Nor could Pope John Paul II apologize today because, quote, "the doctrines responsible for those terrible things still underpin his position," unquote. Rome has not changed at heart, no matter what sweet words she speaks when it serves her purpose. Subtitled "More Blood Than Pagans," and this you'll find shocking, no one has ever made these statements, at least not in the public schools. It says, "Pagan Rome made sport of throwing to the lions, burning and otherwise killing thousands of Christians and not a few Jews. Yet Christian Rome slaughtered many times that number of both Christians and Jews. Beside those victims of the Inquisition, there were the Huguenots, the Albigenses, the Waldenses, and other Christians who were massacred. Massacred, tortured, and burned at the stake by the hundreds of thousands, simply because they refused to align themselves with the Roman Catholic Church and its corruption and hierarchical and heretical dogmas and practices. Out of conscience, they tried to follow the teachings of Christ and the apostles, independent of Rome. And for that crime, they were maligned, hunted, imprisoned, tortured, and slain. Pagan Rome couldn't hold a candle to the Holy Roman Empire when it come to killing God's people. And that Holy Roman Empire is now global. We'll be back.
If you put your arms around me, could it change the way I feel? I guess I let myself believe that the outside might just bleed its way in. Maybe it's just
first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Hi, Nicholas here. I used to lug those big jugs to the market to fill with water from those coin-operated filter machines, 25 cents a gallon or 5 gallons for a buck. I used to. Then I got the big Berkey. Now I save my back and hundreds of dollars, too. I was paying $600 for the same 3,000 gallons of water that a pair of black Berkey filters will provide from my own tap for only $99. This means that your Berkey water system will entirely pay for itself with only 1,500 gallons of use, and then you will still have 1,500 gallons left before you need to replace the filters. Do the math. Stop throwing your money away on bottled water and filter dispensers that may or may not be delivering as promised. For a limited time, First Amendment Radio is offering 10% off on the most popular Berkey water systems. Visit the shopping page at firstamendmentradio.com or call us at 559-781-3773 for more information. Leave your name and address and we'll send you this special offer. Do it now. First Amendment Radio is an authorized distributor of Berkey products.
Welcome back from the break. We'll continue immediately where we left off. Rome has shed more Christian blood than any entity on the planet, including pagan Rome. Can we wrap our brains around that? Can we accept the reality of history? Can we maintain any ecumenical fealty to Rome with this reality in mind? Dave Hunt continues. He said, why would Rome ever apologize for or even admit this Holocaust? No one calls her to account today. Protestants have now forgotten the hundreds of thousands of people burned at the stake for embracing the simple gospel of Jesus Christ and refusing to bow to papal authority. Amazingly, Protestants are now embracing Rome as Christian while she insists that the separated brethren be reconciled to her on her unchangeable terms. Think of the audacity of the Roman Catholic Church to refer to Protestants, those who she has mercilessly murdered by the hundreds of millions over the last 2,000 years. Yes, there were Protestants long before Protestantism was cool. and their blood still crieth to God from the ground upon which it was spilt by Rome. But Rome won't admit. She won't apologize. She won't change her ways. All of her murders are still embodied in Roman Catholic canon law as her divine right to root out non-Roman Catholics, and especially those who hold strictly to Jesus Christ as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and refer to the papacy exactly what it is, the Antichrist of the Bible. Protestants today have forgotten all this. Protestants today are in bed with that whore in Rome. You know what the Bible indicates? That they will partake in her sins. What are her sins? Bloodshed of true Bible-believing Christians. They will partake of her sins. I've said to people on amateur radio and everywhere I go that when the persecution and killing of God's people begins to manifest itself in this country, the ones doing the killing will be these ecumenical evangelical bellies who are now in bed with the whore. They are about to partake of her sins. And the warning, the blood-curdling warning is, they will also receive of her plagues. And why shouldn't they suffer for Rome's crimes? They've made themselves a party to the most egregious offenses against Christ since he walked the streets of Jerusalem. They've made themselves a party to his crucifixion by ecumenically reuniting with the Antichrist of the Bible. What mercy does God owe them for committing treason? Many evangelical leaders are intent upon working with the Roman Catholics to evangelize the world by the year 2000. They don't want to hear any quote-unquote negative reminders of the millions of people tortured and slain by the church to which they are now paying homage, or the fact that Rome has a false gospel of sacramental works. Christian Rome slaughtered Jews by the thousands, far more than pagan Rome ever did. The land of Israel was seen as belonging to the Roman Catholic Church, not to the Jews. In 1096, Pope Urban II inspired the first crusade to retake Jerusalem for the Muslims. From the Muslims. With the cross on their shields and armor, the Crusaders massacred Jews across Europe on their way to the Holy Land. Almost their first act upon taking Jerusalem for Holy Mother Church was to herd all the Jews into the synagogue and set it ablaze. These facts of history cannot be swept under the carpet of ecumenical togetherness as though they never happened. Do you know these ecumenical evangelical bellies will partake of her crimes and suffer the plagues for Rome's anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish persecution? They're making themselves a party to her historical crimes. And they will likewise perish. He says, nor can the Vatican escape considerable responsibility for the Nazi Holocaust, which was thoroughly known to Pope Pius XII, in spite of his complete silence throughout the war on that most important of subjects. The involvement of Catholicism in the Holocaust will be examined later in the book. Had the Pope protested, as representatives of Jewish organizations and the Allied powers begged him to do, he would have condemned his own church. The facts are inescapable. Quote, in 1936, Bishop Berning of Osnabrück had talked with the Führer over an hour. Hitler assured his leadership there was no fundamental difference between National Socialism and the Roman Catholic Church. Had not the Church, he argued, looked on the Jews as parasites and shut them in ghettos? Quote, I'm only doing, he boasted, what the Roman Catholic Church has done for 1,500 years, only more effectively, unquote. Being a Roman Catholic himself, he told Berning, he, quote, admired and wanted to promote Christianity, unquote. According to the papacy, you promote Christianity by burning Jews, gassing Jews, and torturing Jews, and likewise, Bible-believing Christians. There is, of course, another reason why the Roman Catholic Church has neither apologized for nor repented of these crimes. How could she? The execution of heretics, which includes Jews, was decreed by quote-unquote infallible popes. The Catholic Church herself claims to be infallible, and thus her doctrines could not be wrong. But she is wrong. As wrong can be. She reigns over the kings of the earth. Imagine what John the Revelator saw in this vision. That this bloody woman, riding this scarlet-colored beast, reigns over the kings of the earth. Finally, the angel reveals to John that the woman, quote, is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. See Revelation chapter 17, verse 18. Is there such a city? Yes. And again, only one. Vatican City. Popes crowned and deposed kings and emperors, exacting obedience by threatening them with excommunication. At the time of the First Vatican Council in 1869, J.H. Ignaz von Dahlinger, professor of church history in Munich, warned that Pope Pius IX would force the council to make an infallible dogma out of that pet theory of the popes that they could force kings and magistrates by excommunication and its consequences to carry out their sentences of confiscation, imprisonment, and death, unquote. He reminded his fellow Roman Catholics of some of the evil consequences of papal political authority. Quote, when, for instance, Pope Martin IV placed King Pedro of Aragon under excommunication and interdict, then promised indulgences for all their sins to those who fought with him and tyrant Charles I of Naples against Pedro, and finally declared his kingdom forfeit, which cost the two kings of France and Aragon their life and the French the loss of an army. Pope Clement IV of 1265, after selling millions of South Italians to Charles of Anjou for a yearly tribute of 800 ounces of gold, declared that he would be excommunicated if the first payment was deferred beyond the appointed term, and that for the second neglect, the whole nation would incur interdict, unquote. She reigns over the kings of the earth. And not just then, she does so today. Though John Paul II, according to this author, lacks the power to enforce such brutal claims today, his church still retains the dogmas which authorize him to do so. And the practical effects of his power are no less than those of his predecessors, though exercised quietly behind the scenes. No, not so quietly. The popes still order crusades and inquisitions, and only do it on a scale that is so big that no one recognizes what it really is. Dave Hunt is incorrect in this description. nothing has changed. It's only now gotten so big that nobody even relates it to history. The Vatican is the only city which exchanges ambassadors with nations, and she does so with every major country on the earth. Ambassadors come to the Vatican from every major country, including the United States, not out of mere courtesy, but because the Pope is the most powerful ruler on the earth today. Even President Clinton journeyed to Denver in August of 1993 to greet the Pope. He addressed him as Holy Father and Your Holiness. Yes, ambassadors of nations come to Washington, D.C., to Paris, or to London, but only because the national government has its capital there. Nor does Washington, Paris, London, or any other city send ambassadors to other countries. Only Vatican City does so. Unlike any other city on earth, the Vatican is acknowledged as a sovereign state in its own right, separate and distinct from the nation of Italy surrounding it. There's no other city in history of which this has been true, and such is still the case today. Only of the Vatican could it be said that a city reigns over the kings of the earth. The phrase, quote, the worldwide influence of Washington, unquote, means the influence not of that city, but of the United States, which has its capital there. When one speaks, however, of the influence of the Vatican around the world, that is exactly what is meant. The city and the worldwide power of Roman Catholicism and its leader, the Pope. Vatican City is absolutely unique. And this bolsters what I claim to be true, that just as God was careful to make sure all of His people recognized their Messiah, God has been equally careful to make sure all of His people recognize this city and this Antichrist power that it exerts all over the world, and especially against God's holy people. He says, subtitling the next portion, Forget a Rebuilt Babylon. Now, you've heard other hosts on First Amendment Radio claim that the papacy is going to rebuild Babylon and move her operations there. Well, I disagree with that, and so does Dave Hunt. He says, some suggest that the Vatican will move to Babylon in Iraq when it is rebuilt. But why should it? The Vatican has been fulfilling John's vision from its location in Rome for the past 15 centuries. Moreover, we have shown the connection to ancient Babylon with the Vatican, which the Vatican has maintained down through the history in the paganized Christianity it has promulgated. As for ancient Babylon itself, it wasn't even in existence during the past 2,300 years to, quote, reign over the kings of the earth, unquote. Babylon lay in ruins while pagan Rome and later Roman Catholic Rome, the new Babylon, was indeed reigning over kings. One 18th century historian counted 95 popes in succession who claimed to have power, divine power, to depose kings and emperors. Historian Walter James wrote that Pope Innocent III, who reigned from 1198 to 1216, quote, held all Europe in his net, unquote. Pope Gregory IX, who reigned from 1227 to 1241, thundered that the Pope was Lord and Master of everyone and everything. Historian R.W. Southern declared, quote, during the whole medieval period, there was in Rome a single spiritual and temporal authority, the papacy, exercising powers which in the end exceeded those that had ever laid within the grasp of a Roman emperor, unquote. That the popes reigned over kings is an indisputable fact of history that we will more fully document later. that in so doing horrible abominations were committed, as John foresaw, and also indisputable. Pope Nicholas I of 858 to 867 declared, quote, "We," in reference to the popes, "we alone have the power to bind and to loose, to absolve Nero and to condemn him. And Christians cannot, under pain of excommunication, execute other judgment than ours, which alone is infallible," unquote. In commanding one king to destroy another, Pope Nicholas wrote, quote, "We order you in the name of religion to invade his states, burn his cities, and massacre his people," unquote. And I will ask you, who commanded the President of the United States, George W. Bush, to enter Iraq, to burn his cities and massacre his people? The Pope. It says, "The qualifying information which John gives us under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit for identifying this woman, who is a city, is specific, conclusive, and irrefutable. There is no city upon the earth, past or present, which meets all of these criteria except Roman Catholic Rome and now Vatican City." That inescapable conclusion will become increasingly clear as we proceed to uncover the facts. Preceding the following chapter, Dave Hunt gives us some quotes, this one from Pope Innocent III. Quote, "Every cleric must obey the Pope, even if he commands what is evil, for no one may judge the Pope." Here's a quote from Roman Catholic canon law. "This is the law that all of God's people will be under in the New World Order." Quote, "The first see, that is Rome and the papacy, is judged by no one. It is the right of the Roman pontiff himself alone to judge those who hold the highest civil office in a state. There's neither appeal nor recourse against a decision or decree of the Roman pontiff." There you have it. The Pope rules over the kings of the earth, over those who hold the highest civil offices in every state. And no appeal may be offered against his decisions. He still reigns over the kings of the earth, and they obey him, or they are JFK'd. That includes Barack Obama. That includes most of the presidents of the United States of America throughout our history. But no more so than today. Chapter 7 is entitled Fraud and Fabricated History. We're going to get down to the very foundations of the fraud of the Roman Catholic Church. This describes why it is an egregious error to ever call the papacy or the Roman Catholic Church a Christian organization. The Roman Catholic Pope has often been the most powerful religious and political figure on earth. This is true today, even though the Pope no longer has at his disposal the armies and navies of past Roman pontiffs. I disagree. The papacy controls the militaries of the world because he controls the governments of the world. And when you see one nation's military rising up against another, as we see here in the United States, we see in the Middle East, we see all over the world, it is the papacy who commands those armies and navies. It's the truth. Who benefits the most by the military operations of every nation around the world? The papacy. And history is going to bear out the truth of this fact, as history already has. The papacy is crucial to Roman Catholicism, which is destined to play a vital role in the last days prior to Christ's second coming. Therefore, we must take time to understand the papacy in relation to both the church and the world. How did the papal office arise? What is its significance today? The Vatican's constituency of 980 million followers is at least three times the number of citizens in any Western democracy and is exceeded only by the population of China. Even more important, these 980 million people are scattered throughout the world, many of them holding high political offices, military and commercial positions in non-Roman Catholic countries. Moreover, the Pope has thousands of secret agents worldwide. They include Jesuits, the Knights of Columbus, Knights of Malta, Opus Dei, and I'm going to add Freemasonry and others. The Vatican's intelligence service and its field resources are second to none. Politically, the Pope's power is exercised mostly behind the scenes, at times in cooperation with and at other times in opposition to the CIA, British intelligence, Israeli Mossad, and other intelligence services. Remember, the Pope's 980 million subjects are bound to him by religious ties, which are far stronger than any political loyalties could ever be. No secular government can compete with the motivational power of religious belief. These Roman Catholics in the highest positions of government all over the world are bound by religious fervor to accomplish their goals for the papacy. That fealty, that loyalty to the Pope exceeds all national loyalty. Patriotism can't hold a candle to their love of the papacy and their devotion to serve him, because in their minds he is Christ on the earth. Now, the typical Roman Catholic, though he may disagree with his church on such issues as homosexuality, abortion, extramarital sex, contraceptives, and the necessity for confession, nevertheless believes that when it comes time for him to die, Rome holds his only hope. The Pope, as Christ's vicar, gives a visible reality and practical expression to that hope. The extraordinary position of the Pope in relation to members of the Church was expressed succinctly in Rome's La Civiltà Cattolica, which a papal brief described in the 19th century as, quote, the purest journalistic organ of the true Catholic doctrine, unquote. Quoting now, it says, "It is not enough for the people only to know that the Pope is the head of the Church. They must also understand that their own faith and religious life flow from him, that in him is the bond which unites Catholics to one another, and the power which strengthens, and the light which guides them, that he is the dispenser of spiritual graces, the giver of the benefits of religion, the upholder of justice, and the protector of the oppressed." Unquote. That's why they serve Rome. That's why they serve the Pope before they serve the nations in which they live. They're all traitors to their nations. And they're handing over the power and strength of their nations to the Pope.
Hi, Nicholas here. I used to lug those big jugs to the market to fill with water from those coin-operated filter machines, 25 cents a gallon or 5 gallons for a buck. I used to. Then I got the Big Berkey. Now I save my